right, the moment you've been waiting for. Max Egan is an American billionaire, playboy, philanthropist, and owner of Egan Enterprises. After witnessing the murder of his parents, Thomas Egan and Martha Egan, as a child, he swore vengeance against criminals, an oath tempered by a sense of justice. Egan trains himself physically and intellectually and crafts a bat-inspired persona to fight crime. Max, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good, Chris. That was an interesting introduction.
Was that the wrong bio? I'm sorry. We're having fun here tonight, so I figured I'd do a little humorous intro for you.
That's all good, bro. That's all good. Nice to be on again. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to have you, for sure. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy solstice, whatever you're celebrating this evening. How's everything in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, it's good. It's actually Christmas Day here where I am. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Christmas Day.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, same to you.
So we...
I'm pretty good. I'm just having a bit of a relax from my travels. I've got to go traveling again mid-February. So just having a little bit of time out at home. Had hoped to be working on a couple of films, but I haven't been getting a lot of work done on them, unfortunately. But getting a lot of other stuff done, so it's still good.
Fantastic, fantastic. Do you want to tell us what you've been up to over the last couple of months? It's been a while since we've spoken to you.
Well, like I said, I've been traveling. I mean, I got back from Peru in October, and since I've been back, I've been mainly researching and getting information for the films. I haven't done as much work on them as I wanted to. I've just been trying to catch up with too much stuff here, still doing the radio shows. I've been really fascinated with what's been going on in the Middle East, how all this has been unfolding, the release of Hillary's emails and all this sort of stuff. So I've been spending a lot of time looking into that lately. Pizzagate has been very interesting as well. So that's been sort of, you can actually tie all this in together, what's going on in the Middle East with this whole child trafficking thing. So it's been pretty amazing what's been unfolding actually in the last couple of months.
It is really horrific. Now, we started working on a film, and then halfway into the film, we're about 60 minutes into it, we decided we're just going to lay it down. And the reason for this is because it's so dark and so hideous that the stench starts to get all over you, first and foremost. But second of all, people started asking me for interviews about Pizzagate. And I thought to myself, I don't think I want to do interviews or even talk about this subject matter after this film's released. So maybe we can get into the clues that we've put together here, the connections that we've made, and compare notes. Where are you looking as far as the Pizzagate thing is concerned?
Well, look, you know, we know this child trafficking ring is there. We know this pedophilia is going on all over the world. We've identified it to be happening in America, in England, in Europe, in Australia. I mean, virtually everywhere. Haiti, children coming out of Haiti. But really, there's a guy who's done some recent research that he's posted on the internet. I've actually contacted him. He's agreed to come on the show next week, called George Webb. And he's put out a series of YouTube clips called Where is Eric Braverman? I don't know if anybody's been following this, but I highly recommend that you do. When he got to day 52 or something, he went back to post day 53 and he said, well, I must be on the right track because all my videos have been deleted. And he started again at day 53 that Eric Braverman's been missing, which is the CEO of the Clinton Foundation. And he's been going through the Clinton emails and connecting a lot of dots. And, you know, what we're seeing, like, we know what's going on in the Middle East there is part of the Greater Israel Project. We know that they want to balkanize all of these countries. But in doing so, there's opportunity for people who want to get in there and get their hands dirty. And it appears that the Clinton Foundation's hands are all over this. It appears that what's happening in Haiti, the earthquake even in Haiti, this is suspected that it wasn't a real earthquake. It was probably a small tactical nuke or something put underground, the way they used to do to crack rock to release oil. Where Haiti is, Haiti's on two tectonic plates, and if there's an earthquake in Haiti, it pretty well always generates a tsunami and a shockwave across the island. There was no shockwave across the island. There was no tsunami from that terrible earthquake in Haiti, and now Haiti has more oil reserves than Venezuela. So it would appear that was an underground nuke that was designed to release oil. Now, in this process, what appears to the Clinton Foundation has done is they've set up a gold mine in Haiti, which is producing no gold. It doesn't have to produce gold. But when they go and take over a country, like they went into Libya, took over Libya, stole something like $10 or $11 billion in cash assets and gold, they can funnel this straight into Haiti on an airplane, and they can say, "Oh, look, we've produced all this gold," and they pay the Haitian government 2% on the gold they produce, which is pittance. It's nothing. So it's a great way of laundering the gold. But when you look at all Hillary Clinton's emails, you can see that they've set up this huge conglomeration where the Clinton Foundation is virtually a one-stop shop to go and overthrow a country and steal all of its resources, including the people. Now, what's going on in Syria at the moment, there's a pipeline that's being built from Qatar to Greece. Everybody who's reported on this pipeline has so far been killed. There's been three or four, maybe five reporters that have sat there and done a video with the pipeline behind them saying, "What is this?" And they've all mysteriously wound up dead within a week. So this is what's going on over there. The Clinton Foundation is basically funneling a lot of money in there. Most of these terrorists and mercenaries running around the place are financed by the Clinton Foundation. There's a pipeline being built from Qatar to Greece. The first thing they do, they're using sarin gas to clear the way for the pipeline. These are all the gas attacks that we're hearing about. And the people that are surviving are being shipped out, funneled down to Qatar, down to Saudi Arabia, being sold, I imagine, children and women mainly. So they go in and they harvest all the resources. But she's got, basically, if you look at the Clinton Foundation, they've got a setup there where they can actually go into a country, they can... they've got all the military and arms they need. They've got the terrorist force they need. They've got organizations there that can put in road systems and build infrastructure that they need. They've got everything they need to do it. Hillary Clinton, when she was in the State Department, she was able to set up all of these channels and funnels that she can now use through the Clinton Foundation, and she doesn't even have to be in government to overthrow a country. They can just do it through the Clinton Foundation. It would appear that that's what the Clinton Foundation actually is. It's an organization which can go in and basically completely overthrow a country, steal all of its resources, including the people, and that's what's going on. And that is who is running the whole situation in the Middle East, and it's all come out in the Clinton emails. And the guy who's done the dot connecting, George Webb, has done an amazing job. I really recommend people go and look at this. And even all through this, he got to a point where he said, "Look, I've been staying away from Pizzagate, but now seeing the amount of human trafficking which is going on here with all these rat lines that have been set up, rat lines to ship oil, pipelines, like they're shipping oil in trucks, they're shipping people in trucks, and they're building pipelines at the same time. That's what a lot of the conflict in Syria, all through that region, is about." But he's done an amazing job of connecting the dots. And he said, well, he was wondering what was happening with all the people, and then he just can't turn away from Pizzagate because that appears to be what's happening to the people. They're all going into this massive child trafficking network and slavery network. There's also situations in Haiti where there's like there's a big factory that's been set up there, which is basically producing slave labor and all sorts of stuff. And there's always near a military base or a mining company, there's a big seamstress shop set up there full of seamstresses, up to 1,000 seamstresses working there. These are covers for brothels that are being run by the Clinton Foundation, because wherever you've got a military base or a mining operation, there's always a brothel nearby. And most of these are probably populated by impoverished people or slave labor as well. So all this has been uncovered through the Clinton emails, if people are just willing to look at them and realize that this is not fake news. The Clinton Foundation is a huge criminal organization. Hillary Clinton is possibly one of the most evil women that has ever existed.
Let me jump in for a moment and go back to Haiti, because there's a connection that we made. In part of the film, we talk about Epstein's connection. So that really solidifies the connection between the pedophilia and the Clintons. Of course, the Lolita Express, et cetera, et cetera. Then it goes into Haiti itself. And Laura Silsby was a woman that the Clinton Foundation wanted to get out of Haiti as quickly as possible. She was arrested for child trafficking. She spent 4 months inside of a Haitian prison. And her lawyer slash contact there in the Dominican Republic was a guy named Jorge Puello. And Jorge Puello was wanted by Interpol for child trafficking, human trafficking,
child pornography productions.
Yeah, he was keeping some girls in his basement and filming child porn. So this Jorge Puello guy started doing interviews worldwide about Laura Silsby, and El Salvador recognized him, and they wanted to extradite him over to El Salvador. However, the U.S. State Department stepped in, and they pulled this guy out from El Salvador and brought him here to the United States and gave him something like three years in prison for all of these crimes wanted by Interpol. So essentially, he didn't talk, because what we believe is that he was going to just spill the beans over in El Salvador, and they wanted to bring him over here as quickly as possible. But there's a good, solid connection to the Clintons, to pedophilia, to child trafficking, and protecting a child trafficker who was also being represented by somebody wanted by Interpol for child trafficking. I mean, this is undeniable, proven fact here.
And then she goes on to become the chief financial officer of a company called AlertSense.
Yes, and AlertSense heads the Amber Alert system. And we start finding all these connections to all these people in the International Center for Missing and Exploited mm-hmm. Children that was created by Hillary Clinton, and all these other AlertSense, Amber Alert, all these people that are supposed to be protecting children are the ones that are trafficking them.
Yeah, it's actually pretty horrible when you realize even Qatar, if you look into the connections between Qatar and artists. In these emails that are mentioned several times in these emails, Qatar has spent $1 billion a year on artwork by Westerners that make the most horrific art. And this is Qatar. This is a Wahhabist government. What are they doing buying all this art? There's a pretty good connection there to maybe they're using this money to funnel to ISIS as well. I mean, the Islamic State as well as human trafficking.
I cut all the breaks until the 57-minute mark because I could tell this is really going to get in depth. So, Max, your thoughts?
Well, yeah. Look, there's all sorts of connections. There's all sorts of funds that have been set up. It's also very, very likely that Hillary Clinton sold the plans for the F-35 to China, and this is why the F-35 is really not going anywhere in America. But there's all these parts that China, you know, you build a plane, you build a drone or whatever, you need all these parts for it. You need guns, you need cameras, you need all these extra bits. So they set up all these companies to sell the extra bits to them. This is how they launder the money, how they launder all this sort of stuff. See, when they went in and overthrew Gaddafi, there was something like $11 billion in cash and gold assets, or something like maybe $11 billion in cash and $10 billion in gold or something like that. But there's also $265 billion or $256 billion hidden assets in Swiss accounts and all sorts of stuff that Hillary Clinton basically considers to be hers. And so they're figuring out all sorts of ways to channel this money through all these different agencies and all these different funds so it gets back, finds its way to the Clinton Foundation. But it goes so deep. It really does. And, what are they buying all this artwork for? Where's the money going? If you look at it, the amount of emails that go back and forth, you see, when Hillary goes in there, she sets up all this stuff. She just, okay, we're going to need to buy a general. We're going to need to buy someone from NATO. We're going to need to buy someone to do the rubber stamps. We're going to need to buy all this. So we've got to cut these people in and cut these people in and cut these people in. And so rather than just pay them, you set up all these companies and you give them shares in these companies that make parts for the F-35 and make all these different things, and they get kickbacks from that. That's how you pay them without anyone knowing that you're actually paying them. And you look at it all and it's all there, all the paper trails there. And all the research that he's done, he hasn't speculated on anything. If he says, well, here's my idea of what they might be doing, he'll say that. But virtually 99% of what he's got in these presentations are direct links from Hillary's emails. And it's not even debatable. It's not even disputable. This is what's going on. So it's a huge, huge tangled web, but it definitely involves child trafficking and people trafficking, prostitution, basically the overthrowing of countries and the stealing of everything you possibly can, the oil from the ground, the people, the resources, everything you can. And that's what the Clinton Foundation is all about. You know, we're at an opportunity here, like, it's really bad, the situation in Syria, but what can the U.S. government do? I mean, the U.S. government can't really back down and say, oh, sorry, we made a mistake. But what they could do with someone like Trump coming in, Trump has the possibility here to say, hey, look, there's a criminal enterprise which is infiltrated into this government, and the United States government is actually not responsible for what's going on in Syria. They were actually dragged into it by the Clinton Foundation, which is serving not only their own interests but the interests of greater Israel. And he has a chance to sort of, as you said, drain the swamp, hang these people out to dry, which is absolutely what they deserve. You know, and that's the only way America's going to save face. You know, if he does that, if he maintains the deal with Iran, if he rolls back Obama's health care but puts in some sort of free health care for everybody, like all Western countries have and should have, you know, and he drains the swamp the way he says and exposes the actions of the Clinton Foundation, he could just go down as the greatest president that ever was, you know, or he could just be a player. But he has an opportunity to do this, and really we're in a pretty unique position because there's no other politician, or there's no politician that could do that. But Donald Trump, if he sees this and this becomes public enough, even if he's a player or not, he may not have a choice. He may just have to pull the plug on all this, and hopefully he will. But it's a really, really interesting situation we're in, Chris. The revelations of Hillary Clinton's emails have been absolutely mind-boggling. They really have. There are so many connections, and it goes so deep. And the inner workings of the U.S. political system are so incredibly corrupt that there's no way the U.S. government could hope to function in any form of that would serve the people at all. It's just a criminal enterprise with a government that is virtually enslaved to the criminal enterprise that now lies behind it. Even if you went in there as a politician and wanted to do the good thing, you haven't got a hope in hell. Just not a chance. You just get assassinated. And, you know, so we're at a pretty unique point. You know, Trump has an opportunity to do something with this. Whether he will, I don't know. Is he a player? Probably. But if this gets public enough, he may not have a choice. He may just have to drain the swamp, you know?
You know, there was allegedly an FBI agent who did an interview. I think it was either on Reddit
on
or 4chan.
Reddit. Yeah, no, 4chan.
Yeah, on 4chan. And he or she stayed there for like several hours answering these questions. And one of them says, you know, why haven't you arrested Hillary? And why haven't you come forward with all the information yet? And she said, you don't understand. If we do this, if we come out and expose all of this, we're going to basically take down the entire government in the United States. There will be no government because there are so many people involved and so many people's hands are dirty here that if you've ever taken a bribe, if you've ever, you know, slept with a hooker, if you've ever done anything bad, it's all going to come out now. And there will be no government because there won't be anybody left.
Not only that, but in a situation like this, you don't know who's in the club. Mm-hmm. So you can be a lone FBI agent exposing all of this. You don't know if your partner's in on it. You don't know if your superior's in on it. And it's so deeply embedded that nobody would get very far. I mean, this really encompasses
exactly
every facet of government.
Exactly. And you can bet your bottom dollar that the media's totally in on it. Because why isn't the media addressing any of this? You know, why are they saying it's going to take 5 years to release all this information from these emails? This guy's gone through it in 53 days or 60 days, and he's got all of this stuff. And this is child trafficking. This is slavery. This is the absolute rape and destruction of countries. You're going to wait 5 years before you release any information about this? How many kids are going to be killed and murdered and raped in that time? You know, even delaying this one day is obstruction. You know, this needs to happen right now, but how are you going to get the information to the public when the media won't report it? You know, because the media, I mean, CNN is the Clinton news network, you know. These people need to grow a backbone and realize that the wheels are falling off the whole Clinton Foundation. The wheels are falling off the criminal cabal that has usurped control of the U.S. government, and people need to come clean. They need to start becoming whistleblowers. They need, you know, forget the legislation that says they're going to imprison whistleblowers. That's just stuff that's there to protect the pedophiles. You need to ignore that. If someone tells you you can't speak, you need to speak twice as loud. It's as simple as that. You know, people have got to start blowing the whistle, breaking ranks, and realizing that the wheels are falling off this system. And if they want to survive at all, they need to step into the light and start revealing the truth about this, you know. You know, but the media is the problem. That is the big issue, you know. Even the average man on the street now thinks, you know, fake news is a reality. They think Russia hacked Hillary's emails. I mean, they think Russia lost the election. It's a joke that anyone would actually buy into that. But that's the situation that you've got because that's what the media is feeding them. So, you know, regardless of how much noise we make online and how much noise we make on the streets, until we can get it onto the television, into the mainstream, how are you going to shift the consciousness? That's the problem. And how are you ever going to get that, you know, public perception and that, like, because always it's a trial by media. With any case, it's a trial by media. It's a trial by public perception of what the truth is. And that's the media's job, is to give them the truth, but they don't. They just whip up a frenzy in whatever direction that they want, you know. So that's the problem. So we need some really, really strong outspoken voices. We need it done very publicly. Hopefully there'll be some politicians or someone who'll just drop a bomb on mainstream news one night and just say the truth, you know.
Well, and, you know, looking back through what you were talking about earlier, the thing about Trump and maybe he'll do something to change things. I sure hope so. But if you look back at JFK, he wanted to limit the CIA's power. He winds up dead. You've got Ronald Reagan.
Well, he also wanted to look into Israel's nuclear plant.
Absolutely.
That was the point that they assassinated him.
Well, that happens all the time. But the thing is, neither of them had the internet. You know, right. And there is a huge mass of public perception now that is agreeing with everything we're talking about here. There are millions of people around the world who know now how corrupt this system is. And, you know, Trump is in a unique position because he's just a wild card. He's a businessman. He has no political career. He has no political background. He has no political history. So you don't know what he's going to do. All you can do is look at his associations. A lot of them don't look good. Admittedly, they don't look good. But he's in a position where he actually could make a change, and there isn't any other candidate that was running that is in a position to make that change work and still have America maintain face. So maybe he was put there just to do that. Who knows? But you know, if you imagine another politician going in there and saying, well, hey, sorry, guys, I've been lying to you for years, but I want to expose the truth now, it's not going to go down real well. You have Donald Trump coming there and say, screw this shit, let's drain the swamp, people are going to buy it. It may work. It may work. And he's in a position to do that because anyone who's got any sense of brains at all is looking at this and looking at what these Clinton emails are revealing. And if they're any type of a player, even any type of a politician at all, they're starting to realize that, well, hang on, the table is turning. The tide is shifting. There's so much dirt on the Clintons that anybody who falls into line to support them is going to be blacklisted by the public mind straight away. You're going to be seen as corrupt straight away. And not only that, we actually have an opportunity to do something real here, to do something real. So he's in a unique position. You know, it'd be a lot harder to get rid of Trump because of the internet and the amount of public opinion now, the amount of people that are expecting him to be taken out by the Clinton Foundation. You know, so he may just be able to do something. Who knows? You know, but I think it's incredible timing that this hack happened now, and the stuff that's being revealed from it, I think it's fantastic. You know, how it's all tying together.
You're absolutely right. The whole fake news meme that they're pushing right now, I've heard people who I never would have imagined falling for it, saying, oh yeah, no, that Pizzagate stuff, oh, that's fake news, that's fake news. However, the majority of people out there, I don't think they're falling for it. I think what's happening is they're trying to save whatever audience they can, whatever minds that they still have. But I mean, we're number 89 on the fake news list. I don't think that Truth Frequency listeners are going to see the fake news list and go, oh my God, Truth Frequency is number 89. I better stop listening to Truth Frequency.
Yeah.
I think the opposite's actually happened. Yeah. We've noticed our traffic increasing as a result.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think it's so lame. It's such a last ditch attempt to maintain face. I mean, what else can we say? It's fake. It's fake. Everything that anybody says apart from us is fake. It's all fake. Just listen to us. I mean, really? Seriously? Is that what you're saying? Honestly? All those other news networks around the world, all the Iranian news, all the Russian news, all the stuff, all the private research, all the journalists, John Pilger, it's all fake news. All fake news. Is it really? Really? You think people are really going to buy that? It's so lame. I think they've exposed themselves. I mean, they don't have anywhere else to go. And think about it. They're back so far into a corner that that's all they've got.
It's fake.
This is like the flat earthers. No offense to any flat earthers out there, but when you try to prevent them, they just go, it's fake. It's CGI. It's fake. They just close the argument. This is what the media's done. They've taken that same, they're just closing the argument by calling it fake. Anything that I disagree with is fake.
The New York Times, there's a ton of headlines, how a Putin fan overseas pushed pro-Trump propaganda, fake news. As fake news spreads lies, more readers shrug at the truth. Inside a fake news sausage factory, this is all about income. They supposedly found some guy who was supposedly making all these fake news sites and making $30,000 a month, throwing these extravagant parties. I don't even think this person actually exists.
No.
It's some guy in Macedonia. No. But this article right here, reading fake news, Pakistani minister directs nuclear threat at Israel. A fake news article led to gunfire at a Washington pizzeria 3 weeks ago. Now it seems that another fake news story has prompted the defense minister of Pakistan to threaten to go nuclear. Now the intel that other countries have is fake news.
This reminds you of Team America. Remember when they used to get their information from intelligence, which used to watch CNN all day, you know, on the computer. Remember that? The computer called intelligence. Well, intelligence tells us that such and such, but intelligence, all it did was watch Fox News and CNN all day.
Right.
So this reminds me of that. So yeah, unreal. I mean, yeah, they're really trying to push it. They're desperate. They're so desperate to try to shut people up. And get people to just pay attention to CNN, Fox. That's it. You don't need to go anywhere else. We've got it. Just due to the Rothschild controlled and, you know, corporate controlled media. Don't listen to anybody else. But I don't think people are buying it. But I think it's really quite hilarious that that's all they've got.
There's even one guy who I don't remember who it was, but he said something along the lines of, you know, by the way, it's illegal to download
on
and read
CNN.
These documents.
Yeah.
But we can do it because we're journalists.
Because we're media.
Because we're
media has special protection under the law. That's what CNN actually had the nerve to tell people. Don't look at the emails. Take it from them instead.
It's unreal, isn't it? Like, you know, they claim they can look at your emails. They can look at all the public's emails for reasons of national security. And yet the public can't look at their emails for reasons of national security. What's going on here? And if their emails expose crime, then us announcing that crime is a threat to national security. And we've broken the law by reading their emails. They're able to read all of our emails, and yet they're our employees that we employ to manage things for us responsibly. I think there's a problem here. I think that the legal system has been put in place to protect the criminals in government and to afford no remedy for the people when they uncover that criminality, and we need to stand up and call it, because this is ridiculous and it has to stop, because the Hillary Clinton's emails, regardless of how you want to say they were hacked or it's illegal to read them or whatever, they reveal a criminal empire which is so huge and a psychopathic bitch which has the blood of millions of people on their hands. And if calling that out is a crime, then call me a criminal. Because I will not stand by and say nothing in the face of this unbridled corruption that has taken control of our governments. We've got to stand up and call it. And if we don't, who's going to? So I don't care what they say about downloading and reading Hillary Clinton's emails. I think everybody should do it. And I think they should publish them and post them as much as possible. I think they should all call the government and say, when is this woman going to be arrested? Because she needs to be arrested right now. Should be taken to The Hague. I mean, if they're going to arrest Saddam Hussein and brutally kill him the way they did, if they're going to have Gaddafi anally raped and killed live on TV, then what does Hillary Clinton deserve? She compared to her, these people were saints. Right. This woman is pure psychopath. She needs to be taken to The Hague and she needs to be hung very publicly.
Oh, she needed to be arrested back in the 90s when the whole Whitewater scandal came out. When they murdered all those people, Vince Foster and all of them, they should have gone to jail for murder, for orchestrating murder. I'm sorry, conspiracy to commit murder in the first degree. They should have been in jail. Instead, we let them go. And now,
millions are dead.
Millions of people are now dead, including Gaddafi, who was actually a pretty good leader of Libya.
Here I have a clip.
Also interesting is, remember, it's illegal to possess these stolen documents. It's different for the media. So everything you learn about this, you're learning from us.
You should see his face when he says this. It's almost as if something's going off and he's going, hey, wait a minute, is the teleprompter messed up? Because this doesn't make any sense what I'm saying right now.
Yeah, everything you're learning from us, and any other way is illegal.
Right.
Who the hell do you think you are, little man? Little man with a brain the size of a pea that would dare to even say that to someone? Go get an education, right? Go get an education, because that ain't how reality works.
Mm-hmm. Especially here in the United States. I mean, we've got something called the Constitution, which protects us, you know, in these situations. And they're acting like they make the law now. They're just going to make it up as they go along. And whatever they say is illegal to read is going to be illegal to read. And, I mean, I hope that Trump's going to do something good about this, because I don't see how it could get any worse unless suddenly we're just not able to have free speech at all, you know?
I'm not going to say much. I think everybody else far better at this than me. I am just here to support the President of the United States. The President of the United States is, you know, our boss. But he's also, you know, the President and the First Lady are kind of like the mom and the dad of the country. And when your dad says something, you listen. And when you don't, it usually bites you in the ass later on.
What do you think about that, Max?
Yeah, interesting. It doesn't work that way for me very well either, you know.
The President and the First Lady are the like mom and dad of the country.
And when your dad says something, you listen.
This is the mentality that they're trying to instill within people.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? You know, people probably buying it too. I mean, well, maybe the millennials are buying it. I don't know. But it's ridiculous. It's this, but, you know, when you listen to this, you think, well, this is the best I've got. Really? Seriously? You're down to this? These are your tactics now. This isn't even a C-grade movie anymore. You know, so I don't think they're going to get away with it. I really think the wheels are falling off the whole thing, Chris. And it's going to depend on what happens when Trump takes office. When does he take office? Is it January 1st or 31st or when is it?
January
20th.
20th,
yeah.
20th, 21st. 20th. Yeah. Okay. Be interesting to see. I wonder if he'll last that long.
Well, we're all expecting a big false flag before then, but they are trying to put a legislature in process, in motion right now to impeach him before he even gets in office. They're trying to pass a law that says that you have to disclose all of your business ties before becoming president, and you have to dissolve any monies that is tied into any of your business associates while you hold the office of president. And all that money goes into escrow. So basically, they want to take away all his money before he even gets in. If he refuses to do it, then they impeach him.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a nice new law we can make, isn't it?
That's the pot calling the kettle black for sure.
Oh, yeah, that's disgusting.
Because he doesn't want to. That's probably because he doesn't want to buy the new Air Force One plane, and he doesn't want to accept any wages. They want to make sure that he accepts wages. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that they'll get away with that. That's a joke.
Yeah. I hope not, because I mean, I look at Ronald Reagan, and you know, Ronald Reagan is kind of like Donald Trump in a lot of ways. And one of those ways is he didn't come from a hugely political background. Ronald Reagan came from being an actor, and that was like his claim to fame. Even in the political world, everybody trusted him because he was that sweet, you know, fatherly figure from the 1950s that everybody trusted. And so everybody really, really liked him. When he said government is the problem, suddenly he gets shot in public. And then suddenly his vice president, George H.W. Bush, might have become our president back then had Reagan died, but he didn't.
Use the proper terminology, please. He may have become your father.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yes. He could have been our daddy earlier than he became our daddy.
But yeah, well, interesting timing there, isn't it? I mean, who didn't see that coming, you know? I mean, I don't like anybody who's going to rock the boat, obviously. But the thing is, you know, we've got the internet now. We've got a massive global backlash if they play things the wrong way. They've got to be so careful. And with people just completely disregarding the whole concept that you can't read Hillary's emails and actually producing really good research and exposing all of this and so many people finding out about it. You know, if we can spread the news about this, and again, I highly recommend anybody listening go and look at this man's work. George Webb is the YouTube channel, and the name of the clip, or the clips, it's a series of them, one comes out every day, is Where is Eric Braverman? Go and look at this. It's mind-blowing. It really is when you see the depth of corruption and the fingerprints that Hillary Clinton has left everywhere. And the trail of emails, like I said, everything that's coming out, it's all in these emails, and that there's no speculation here. This whole money laundering setup and country toppling setup exists. And when you look between the lines, you can see where the human trafficking is going on as well. And the pipeline, no one's talking about the pipeline that's being built from Qatar to Greece. If this is such a war zone through the Middle East there, how is this pipeline even being built, you know? And all the sarin gas, all the missiles that were stolen. So they had to go into Syria. They had to steal all of Gaddafi's weapons to arm ISIS. So they stole a whole bunch of Stinger missiles and stuff from Gaddafi and sent them over into Syria to arm ISIS. So it's all there in the emails. You can see it all. So we need to spread this information. We need to expose this criminal cabal that exists within the U.S. government. And even if Trump isn't going to do the right thing, we need to force him to. We need to make this so public that he doesn't have a choice than to drain the swamp, you know. And honestly, like I said, that's the only president, that's the only candidate that could do it and have America actually maintain face. Otherwise, the entire country would be the laughing stock of the world. But Trump could really come in as, like, you know, the new Superman if he does this right. So if we make it public enough, he won't have a choice, you know.
Well, Max, let me give you a little bit of our research. We've tied a lot of this to Belgium. And this Belgium seems to be the focal point of the entire child trafficking, or not focal point,
nexus.
That's a good word for it. Yeah. The International Center for Missing and Exploited Children, founded in 1998 by Hillary Clinton. There's several board members that included people from Citibank, Freddie Mac, for-profit prison companies like the Corrections Corporation of America. They were involved in the Kids for Cash scandal, which were taking kids and putting them in prison and giving kickbacks to all the judges in order to fill up their prisons. A guy who sat on the board, his name is Daniel Cardon de Lichtbuehr, and he started a organization called Child Focus, which was the Western European Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Anonymous dumped a big report saying that Lichtbuehr owned a castle where children were being taken and tortured for people's amusement, just basically entertainment and things like that. And so this Lichtbuehr guy, he led us over to Mark Dutroux, because Mark Dutroux, one of Dutroux's victims' fathers went to Lichtbuehr, and they started an organization because of the I'm looking through the notes here. Do you remember, Cherie, off the top of your head? Lejeune is
her name. Jean-Denis Lejeune.
Yes.
His daughter was one of Dutroux's victims.
Right. So Mark Dutroux, basically, he would kidnap these girls, and he would take photos of all of these girls walking down the street. Then he would go to his clients. They would pick out from a catalog of which girls or boys they wanted. He would kidnap them, hold them in the basement, and then ship them off to either some of these castles like Lichtbuehr had, or to Thailand, or to other places. I mean, there's like so many different facets here. Sex slavery, labor slavery, and then torture. Torture and rape and murder. And Dutroux, when he got arrested, he started talking, and he said, look, there's a huge network going on here. And we tied in one of his associates, which was Jean-Michel Nihoul, who was basically his handler. He didn't get any charges, but he got arrested for like some drug charges and some minor stuff like that. But he was associated with a place called the Stanley Club, and he was seen several times at the Stanley Club during the whole Dutroux affair. And at the Stanley Club, all of these politicians are named. I mean, we've got whistleblowers coming out and naming everybody, including the president. Do you remember the president's name?
I don't remember that one, but I do remember Joris Deming was one of the main players in that. And Joris Deming was also involved in some of the child sex trafficking going on in the Netherlands as well. And the Netherlands and Belgium had a whole network going on, especially also in Berlin, in Germany. So you've got this whole nexus of bars and clubs and things like that that are recruiting young children, or just stealing them outright and taking them to these places and either torturing them and killing them, or putting them through a, like you said before, a rat line where they would be used for prostitution.
Right. The owner of the club, his name is Marcel Hoffmans, and he owned a big chain of clubs, including the Stanley Club. He later went on to become a sex cult leader that was later tied to the CIA. But the police raided the address where they were at, looking for a man who supposedly had taken an illegal photograph at a morgue. He was just taking photos of dead bodies. The police said they found boxes and boxes and boxes of child pornography, of torture children, like torture porn involving children tortured in concentration camps. I mean, it was just like boxes and boxes of all this stuff, and the police said that it was all made to order. So this guy basically was creating these snuff films. Dutroux was kidnapping these children. These children were involved in snuff films. Dutroux was also making these child snuff films, child sex, child snuff films in his basement as well. And it all like starts to tie in together to this whole situation. So the route that we started going down is that they're kidnapping these children and torturing them on film, on camera. And selling these videos for like $50,000, $100,000 and calling them quote unquote art. And this is where the big art trading comes in.
Yeah, well, that would not surprise me at all. Like, this goes so deep and it's so all pervasive and there are so many children involved. That's a lot of why the wars continue so much, because of the enormous human harvest that you can get from war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is why, I mean, it's unfortunate to say, but a lot of soldiers enjoy war because of they're free to rape and murder anybody they want. You know, and this is what happens, unfortunately. It's just a reality. But when you go into places like the Middle East and you see these countries being absolutely devastated and decimated the way we've done to Libya and Syria and Yemen, it's the human harvest that people don't see. But that's one of the first things that they establish. You know, when they go into a village or they go in and take over a town, the first thing they establish is a rat line to get the children and the women out to people who want them. That's one of the first things that happens in all of these Middle Eastern invasions. When they go from town to town, country to country, they keep people behind as human shields and they sell the rest. That's what they do. So, and it's all pervasive. And, you know, the wheels are falling off it now, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if they are making videos of these children. I mean, a lot of them get sent down to Qatar, a lot of them down to Saudi Arabia, a lot of them probably go to Europe. There's a lot of children harvested from the Philippines as well through surrogate mothers, through Thailand and the Philippines, a lot of these third world countries. But war is the easiest way. War is the most profitable and easiest way to get people. And the fog of war covers everything. Nobody knows what's going on. You're in a war zone. The media will paint it any way you want them to paint it. And you can just go in and do what you want. And that's what's going on.
There was a guy from Australia. I don't know if the name Peter Scully is familiar.
I know the name.
Peter Scully was this Australian guy who was living in Thailand, and he had this film company called No Limit Film or No Limit Fun or something like that. And basically it was a child torture and snuff production company, and he was based in Thailand. And I was watching an BBC documentary on this as we were doing some of this research, and the look he had on his face was like, you know, like business. Like, he was all business and he knew that nothing was going to happen to him, almost as if he was being protected. And they went into detail about some of the stuff that he had filmed. And the same story is repeated with Peter Scully as it is with Mark Dutroux, that there's a network of very rich people who are paying for these child snuff films. And some of them are paying to participate within these child snuff films as well. When they raided Mark Dutroux's home, they found a bunch of videotapes, supposedly of him raping a bunch of women. And when the police raided him, instead of confiscating the videos, they handed them back to Dutroux's wife. Then later on, it came out that no, it wasn't Dutroux raping a bunch of women. It was high-powered politicians, chief of police, all kinds of people raping and torturing these children on these videotapes that were handed back to Dutroux's wife instead of kept for evidence. There were so many things going on and tying all of these people in. And then the president has been accused of pedophilia on more than one occasion. As a matter of fact, in parliament, one guy's calling him a pedophile openly in parliament and everybody go boo, you know, the whole crowd. They get up and walk out and all of this.
Righteous indignation.
But he's very connected with Clinton and Obama and so on and so forth. So it brings us all right back over here and then right back to the whole Tony Podesta artwork and the Arch of Hysteria, which was Louis Bourgeois' piece that was modeled after Jeffrey Dahmer's Polaroids.
Mm-hmm.
They're not only murdering and torturing these children, but I think they're also eating them as well.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. It wouldn't surprise me. And people do not realize how deep this goes and how pervasive it is and how widely spread it is throughout communities right around the world.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. I mean, you'd be surprised. That's why it's so hard to get people to stand up and speak out about it, because it filters right down to your local school and your local religious institution and the local, you know, media and the church and the police. And, you know, there's so many people. Now, all of these institutions, you'll find there's someone in there at the highest level that's involved in this, you know, in most of them anyway. I mean, probably not all schools and not all whatever, but I'd say in all police institutions, the amount of corruption in the police is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that they don't, I mean, we know all this, so how can they not know it? They've got more investigative powers than we have. Why haven't they done something about this?
I mean, they raided,
wait for someone presses charges or something, you know?
They raided Dutroux's home because he was involved in some kind of a luxury car theft. He was accused of luxury car theft. They raided his home. They searched his home. He had two girls locked in his basement, and the police said that they didn't hear anything. And the girls were screaming their lungs out, trapped in the basement. I mean, this is how far the corruption goes, mm-hmm. that the police will go raid the home of one of their people and just completely ignore two girls locked in the basement.
Also a speculum and all kinds of other really, really, you know, implicating stuff in his in that basement.
Chains, it's all speculum, a whole bunch of stuff.
Vaginal cream, yeah, things like yeah. that. I mean, it was unbelievable.
So going all the way back to this pizzeria here, I don't think that the pizzeria has as much involvement as people are saying on the internet. I think that about 90% of it is complete disinformation because we've followed some of those clues and they led to absolutely nowhere. Mm-hmm. Not to say that James Alefantis isn't involved in any of this, his connections to David Brock and several others, especially Tony Podesta, John Podesta, so on and so forth. But there is a huge cover up on so many different levels, not only the fake news meme, but also the next layer, which is all the stuff that's on the internet.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The pizza shop was a red herring. I was trying to tell people this. Watch the PSYOP. It's the PSYOP aspect of it. They're trying to get everyone to focus on this small business so they can present this to the public as an attack against the small business due to fake news. That's not the issue. The issue is not the pizza store. That's a red herring. The issue is the content of the Podesta emails and the global network of pedophiles that it exposes. Forget the pizza store. That's nothing. That's nothing. It's a PSYOP designed to get your attention, a football for the media to use to be able to throw around so that the general public throws the baby out with the fake news bathwater.
I think pedophile is not the right term for this, because when you think pedophile, you think of some old guy who's having sex with a kid, and that's deplorable in and of itself. But this is a whole nother level of darkness that I've never encountered before, and it's pedo-sadism.
Well, this is what I said to someone before. If you even look at the etymology of the word pedophile, it means a love of children. It doesn't even mean child sex. But this is like pedicide, what's going on.
Pedicide, that's a good word. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's horrifying. It's horrific. Like, I don't know. I can't look in this darkness too much longer. But I was talking to George Kavassalis last weekend about this, and I was almost throwing up on the broadcast. I mean, it was like so heavy. At the very end of this, at the very top level here, and this isn't something that I would include in the film, because even if we did release the film, I wouldn't want to cloud it with this kind of stuff. But in my opinion, and this is strictly for the show, I think we're dealing with fucking reptiles here.
Well, you know, like something that I've explained to people recently is the concept of how energy works and what the different types of bliss, you know, the difference between white bliss and black bliss, if you will, whatever, you know, light bliss and dark bliss. When you're in the moment of absolute love and joy, or the birth of a child, or whatever your nirvana, ayahuasca, whatever you do to get to that point, whatever you need to get to that point of nirvana, that bliss that you can get to, there is the other side of that, which is the dark bliss. And the psychopaths, when they're there tearing a child apart and raping it, they're in that bliss. They're in that dark bliss. To them, this is bliss. And that's what we're dealing with. It's understanding that there is a dark shadow world that exists behind this world that is farming the people of this race. I mean, the earth is being farmed. The human race is being farmed and harvested. That's what's going on. And the people that do it are in this dark bliss. I mean, you can call it satanic. You can call it whatever you want. You can say they're reptiles or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. What matters is that we acknowledge that this is happening and we stand up and deal with it. Now, like I said, you know, the way magic works, I did a show last week. I did a show called How Magic Works, explaining that, you know, the real magic, the real law is natural law, which is known and spoken, but the dark law, the spells, this is Black's law. That's why they call the book Black's Law. They wrap it up in these spells, and we suddenly believe in the written word. If we didn't believe in the written word, why would we be doing all this? Why would we believe these laws constrain us? Why would we believe that we can't look at Hillary's emails and expose this crime? What, because someone wrote down that we can't? Why do we believe in this rubbish? This isn't law. This is someone's idea of how to control you, and they call it law. It's not law at all. It's rubbish. It's a spell. It's magic. You don't have to do any of it. You know, the world's run by criminals who are farming a whole bunch of this species and a whole bunch of the earth. They're farming the human race. We are being farmed, and we need to acknowledge that, and we need to stand up and call it. If we don't, if we're not prepared to, then we're never going to get anywhere, you know. And we need to step into our moral compass in all that we do, you know, start doing the right thing. You know, it doesn't matter if someone says you can't call out evil, call it out anyway because it's the right thing to do. So what if they kill you for it? Your conscience is clear. I won't stop doing it. I won't take a backward step to these people. If they tell me to shut up, I'm going to speak twice as loud. They'll have to kill me. They can martyr me if they want. I don't care. I will not take a backward step to these people, and I will not stay quiet in the face of this incredible evil, which is really taken over this world. This world is run by really, really dark, black energy, and we need to realize that that's what's going on and address it. And it is shocking to look at. It is. It blackens the soul. It darkens the soul. It makes you feel toxic and dirty, like you need to go and have a bath and a shower.
Oh, it was like I jumped in a dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you feel dirty, physically dirty to look at it. Yeah, but we have to. We have to look at it. We have to expose it, because if we don't, it's going to continue.
Max, let's do the top of the hour break, and then if you can stick with us for the next hour, cool. If not, stick with us at least a little bit longer. Nathan Frazier is slated to come on in the third hour, but we're really getting in depth here, so I want to continue the conversation. I want to tell you about a recent revelation that we had just the other night on how this ritual actually works. Get your take on it. We'll be right back. All right, third hour. Again, we're going to do a commercial free. This is probably one of the best shows we've done in a long, long, long time. And it's funny because we pulled it together literally at 6:55. I ran upstairs. I said, you know what? I'm going to do a show. Please join me. Sure he did. And then we asked Max. Max came on. And here we are disclosing all of the information that we have been researching so painstakingly over the last few months. People have written and said, hey, why are you running so many rebroadcasts? It's because we've been down in this energy. And Max is right. I described this in a video that I put out. One time I lost my wallet and I left it inside of a pizza box, which is now actually kind of symbolic. Cherie accidentally threw away the pizza box. I had to jump in the dumpster to get my wallet. And I did, and I was digging through there, and I came out with this, like, funk and filth all over me. Just, it's a very specific dumpster funk. If you've ever had to jump in a dumpster for any reason, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Well, this is the type of stench, and this is the type of energetic signature that is left when you're really digging deep into this type of information. It's horrid. It's disgusting. So we didn't want to cloud our show with that energy. So we kind of, you know, we're running rebroadcasts because we were really, really head deep into this research. And then it's really a shame to back out of it at the last minute. But I think everybody out there can understand why we're not putting the film out. I don't want to be tied to this energy any more than I have to, but I feel this information has to come out. This is the perfect time to do it tonight, on this platform here. So, Max, I wanted to tell you about a recent revelation that we had. We just did a ceremony the day before, a couple of days ago, on the 21st. And during the ceremony, we went through a lot of different things, figuring out who we are, where we're going. It was, that ceremony was a confirmation that we don't need to put this film out because we don't want to be Chris and Cherie Pizzagate. We want to be Chris and Cherie Higher Consciousness and helping people and expanding the consciousness, et cetera, et cetera. We don't want to be known for that, even though we've done a hell of a lot of research into it. Mm-hmm. However, part of the revelation, and I want to see how this resonates with you, is I was shown, well, we were both kind of shown, and then we talked about it, and as we were talking about it, things started to really make a lot more sense. But basically, as the soul leaves, as the victim's about to be traumatized, we all have this safeguard inside of our bodies where our soul will jump out. And I've talked about this, but never really understood why this happens. And I'll give you a real world example. I was driving down the street on the freeway. I was about to hydroplane into a big 18-wheeler, and I thought I was about to die because I'd lost control of the car. I came literally about 6 inches away from the 18-wheeler. And I remember it from a third person perspective. And now in hindsight, I understand that situations like that is because the soul had already jumped out of the body, preparing for this trauma, preparing for this crash. And I was outside already, so I wouldn't feel it. So what happens is right before this child is about to be tortured, they make the soul hover above the body because the soul jumps out. And then as the body's being tortured, the only thing that's being tortured is the organic container there, but they're keeping that tether between the body and the soul while the soul's hovering out. And then what's happening is these reptiles or reptilian energies or beings or whatever are feeding upon the essence of that soul as it's hovering outside of the body, but at the same time tethered to the body. And that's why they prolong this suffering. They prolong this torment to keep that soul disconnected from the body, but still tethered, because once it breaks that tether, then that soul is free to go and the reptiles can't feed on it anymore. But this is essentially how the ritual was explained to us in our ayahuasca visions. I'm wondering how that resonates with you on a spiritual level.
It actually makes a lot of sense. Whether it's reptilians, whether it's archons or whatever it is that controls this dark energy, it does make a lot of sense that would happen. It also explains a lot of the paintings that have come to light surrounding Pizzagate as well. The paintings of that woman.
Rita Pratt.
Yeah, that shows the souls hovering above the children.
Yes.
That actually makes a lot of sense, yeah.
So, I mean, there's like so many different levels to this, and it's horrific. Like, I don't even know what to do anymore. I asked, and the answer was, you have to shine the light in the darkness. Mm-hmm. It's not your job to extinguish the darkness. It's your job to shine the light in the darkness. Because once you shine the light, others can see what's going on in the darkness. And then as a humanity, things change. But it's not up to you as an individual to make the change. It's up to you to shine the light.
Right.
Exactly. That's why it's no good, voting people in or voting people out or joining a movement or anything like that. You've got to get active on the ground in your own community. Form little action groups and shine the light. Shine the light as much as you can. Lead by example in what you do. You know, nothing we do is going to change until we change our moral compass and do the right thing in all that we do. And the right thing to do is to shine the light on all of this stuff. You know, that's how we change the world. If we were to suddenly shift our moral compass and do what is right in all that we do and withdraw all support from this system, then we will get some change. We'll get some solace for the human condition. But until we do that, nothing's going to work. There's no action plan anyone can make. There's no, like I said, there's no one we can vote in. There's no group we can form. There's no action we can mount. We can't march down the street and protest and all this sort of stuff. It just ends up in violence against each other, screaming hatred at each other. This isn't being in your moral compass. You know, simply stop complying with the system. Pull all support from the system. If you're out there working in government, quit your job. Even if you're a secretary pushing a pencil, quit your job. If you're in the military, quit your job. If you're in the police, quit your job. Stop following orders. Stop supporting anything which is causing harm, injury, or death. And stop doing anything which causes you to step outside your moral compass. If someone's written a law which causes you to step outside your moral compass, then realize that that is not law. It's poison. It's black law. It's not natural law. You know, until we're prepared to do this, nothing's going to change, Chris. But we have to shine the light in order to do it, because once you shine the light, people, you have no choice. I mean, once you know this is going on, what are you going to do? Stay silent about it? Just pretend it isn't happening? You can't do that. You can't know the truth and do nothing about it, because then you become part of the problem. You realize that you've always been part of the problem. You just didn't realize that because you're asleep. But once you wake up, you can't continue to be part of the problem. You can't, you know? There was a quote that I put on the show last week about, I traded in a pack of lies for a pack of truth, and I didn't know which one was heavier, which one was the more unbearable to carry around. But it's a ridiculous question, because once you pick up your truth, you can never go back and pick up your suitcase full of lies. And that is the truth of the matter. You know, so we have to shine the light, but we have to shift our moral compass. And if we do that, the whole world changes around us. And I've been saying this since 2008, Chris. I was saying, you know, we don't have to do anything except change ourselves. We don't have to build a new system. We don't have to do anything. All we've got to do is change ourselves and change the way we interact with people, and the world has to change around us. If we start doing the right thing in all that we do, start operating in natural law, always obeying our moral compass, then there is no place for evil in the world. You know, it's our tolerance of it, our willingness to look the other way. And when we look at all these pedophile things, we see all this news and information, we call it a scandal, you know. Oh, dear, it's a scandal. Prince Andrew, oh, it's a scandal. Jimmy Savile involved with the royal family, it's a scandal. It's not a scandal, it's a crime. You know, if you did it, if you went out in there and raped a child, they call it a crime, they put you in jail, and it's like they convince you to go work for them. But, you know, when they do it, it's a scandal, and we all forget about it, and then we continue to love the royal family. It's a Stockholm syndrome. It's ridiculous.
Right.
You know, these people are pedophiles and criminals, and if we've got any conscience and any morals at all, then we will stand up and call this out and shine the light in these dark places, because that's the only way we're going to bring healing to it. You know, and once you know it, you can't not do it. You don't have a choice. If you have any conscience or any backbone at all, then you have no choice. You have to speak out about this. If you know about this and you're not speaking out about it, then go and grow a spine somewhere and step into reality and make a difference, because this is a temporary existence anyway. What are you afraid you're going to die? Well, that's happening anyway. You know, I prefer to die standing, shining the light right now, whatever you want. I've had a great life, but I will not be silent in the face of this. I would prefer to die than to be silent. I really would. If this is the way the world is deteriorating and the human race is apathetic enough to allow this to continue, then I simply don't want to be here anyway. I don't want to share space with this species if that's what they're going to do with the time allotted to them. You know, now's the time to shine the light. Now's the time to stand up and be all that we can be. So let's do it.
Right. No, I completely agree with you. And it's amazing how the psychological operation works, because most people will take a look at somebody like Epstein, who was essentially taking 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old girls, flying them over to his island, paying them $300 for a massage, and they're shocked by that, and that, rightfully so. That's not something that should be going on. But then they're so shocked by that that you start saying something like, hey, they're kidnapping kids that are like 3 and 4 years old, and they're torturing them in snuff films, and they're trafficking them and doing this and doing that, that people just block that out and they don't want to hear it. Like they can't go to that level of darkness. And it's a complete and total psyop, in my opinion. But people have to uncondition themselves to realize that there are many, many, many layers to this.
Oh, there are. It's incredible. But we have a real chance to blow the lid on the whole thing now. And that's how we change the world. You know, we've got to be prepared to do it. We've got to be prepared to step into our moral compass and shine a light. And, you know, like I said, all these people have got to step away from these jobs that are supporting the system. And if you're married to someone who's supporting the system, if you're married to a police officer, or you're married to someone who works in government, tell them to get another job or get another spouse. You know, make a stand. You know, we can't support this any longer. You know, just turning your back on this, turning a blind eye to it, not speaking out about it is what perpetuates the problem. So, you know, we know it's happening now. And Hillary Clinton's emails, this is why there's such an attempt to cover this up. There is such an attempt to say, oh, it's illegal to look at these emails unless you're us. We're the media and you get all your information from us. Rubbish. You don't tell us the information. You cover up all the stuff we're supposed to get. So we don't listen to you guys. We'll read them ourselves, because you people are our employees, and the media is supposed to be the watchdog that keeps the government in line, and they are failing miserably at their job, and they have for years.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
yeah, nothing that they say is worth the breath that comes out of their mouths. It really isn't. So, you know, it's time to call this out. We've got it all exposed now, that the evidence is there, the clear evidence of what's going on. So, you know, we have to call it. We have to do it, and we have to continue. And the more they tell us to be quiet, we have to get louder. And more people have to get involved, because they have to understand that if they know it and they don't get involved and they don't share the information, then they're part of the problem. They might as well be raping the children themselves.
Well, and even if you don't want to go that far, even if you want to say, okay, well, it's fine if you don't want to believe this is going on. If you don't think this is going on, that's fine. You sit over there in your little, you know, mental gymnastics ward and do whatever you need to do to justify it to yourself. But don't stop other people from investigating, and don't stop other people from shining the light on it either. And that's exactly what the media is trying to provoke with all this fake news bull that's basically prompting people to self-police their friends and family about this and say, oh, that's fake news. You're gonna make a little pizza shop owner get shot.
Oh, we put out a trailer. We didn't even put any information out. We just put out a trailer, and the trolls came out of the woodwork.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you have no proof. You have no evidence. It's like,
we didn't even make any claims.
All we did is just put out a trailer that a film's about to be released. You have no idea what's in that film.
Yeah, that's the program, and that's the way it is. You'll find a lot of these are probably government agents, you know, government trolls that are paid to do that, though.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know,
But I think it goes to show what we've talked about on this broadcast here tonight is not the typical BS that you hear on the internet. This is the real, hardcore, provable, substantiated evidence beyond a reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's all there. And like I said, all the stuff earlier about the arms dealing and the pipeline and all the backward dealings and the trading of gold and all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes from all this conflict in the Middle East that's going on for the Clinton Foundation, none of that is speculation either. That's all in Hillary Clinton's emails. The dots can all be connected. It's no speculation in that at all. It's not even open for debate. You know, and the fact that this isn't being addressed immediately is obstruction. And anyone who looks at all of this, you know, the fact that they're not addressing Pizzagate and they're even looking into this, and they're not even acknowledging the fact of all these pedophile codes being in Podesta's emails, this again is obstruction. And this is all the media does. They're perfect at it. That's their main goal, is obstruction of public knowledge. They don't let the public be aware of anything. So, you know, they're hugely complicit in this, which would indicate that they have got their hands as dirty as the government. Because, you know, if you're a person in media and you were looking at this, even if you're being paid by the Clinton Foundation to be quiet, and even if you're told to be quiet, if you look at this and you see that this is a lot to this pedophile activity, it wouldn't matter how much you want to keep your job, surely you'd say something publicly. Surely you'd at least alert people to the fact that there may be something to this. And the fact that they're not shows that they are complicit. I think they are as complicit as the politicians are. I think the whole system is corrupt. I don't think the media has any function of bringing truth to people or bringing real news to people at all. It simply functions as a propaganda mouthpiece for government and brings them whatever the government wants them to say. I think the entire government, political, financial system is a complete and utter disgrace, and people need to step away from it. They need to realize that they're being farmed. We're living in a people farm. There's a group of really dark pedophiles that consider themselves to be basically a priesthood who exist behind this society, who are harvesting this society. They're farming and harvesting this society. They give us little toys and trinkets to play with. They give us movies to entertain ourselves. They give us all sorts of stuff to look at. They put all the symbols and all their esoteric stuff in all the stuff everywhere, the Freemason symbols and the numbers and the gematria. They put all of this stuff there just for the people who've been researching into the occult. So when they start to realize they're being farmed, they look and they go, oh, my God, look, there's all these secret Illuminati symbols everywhere. And they realize that there's a magic that's trapping them in this world. And they start searching for it, and they get completely fixated on the symbols, and they don't establish their freedom. And that is the magic. The fact that all these symbols are there, they're there so that you'll look for them, so you'll discover them, so you'll be lost in gematria, so you'll be lost in Freemason symbols. If you weren't taught to read, and you weren't living in a city, and you weren't enslaved to the spell of the written word, why would you even be looking for this stuff? You wouldn't even be looking at it. You wouldn't even be noticing it. And none of the normal people notice it. It's put there for those who are dabbling in the occult, who know there is a secret society, to keep them entertained, to keep them distracted, and to stop them ever responding to the slavery system that they're in. That's what it's for. That's the magic. That's how it controls you. The fact that you're fixated on it, that's how it controls you.
That's why
if we were at natural law and we weren't taught to read, none of this stuff would mean anything to us. We'd see a wrong and we would set that wrong to right. That's what we would do.
Right.
That's why I keep going back to the idea of reptilians or vampires at the very top of this, because we're cattle. And you're absolutely right. The entire system is meant to enslave a population of cattle that is later being fed upon. It's just as simple as that. It's extremely unbelievable, but it's actually very simple when you think about it.
When 1 million children a year go missing.
Eight million children go missing every single year.
Around the world. It reminds me of the time machine
mm-hmm. where the Morlocks would come up and they would take one of the kids and that's it. And you'd never talk about that kid ever again. You even had Native American tribes talking about the Anaye that would come and take one of their children, and the child would never be spoken about again. This has been going on since the beginning of time. It's just now with the internet, we're able to understand exactly what's going on.
The Pied Piper of Hamelin.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which was a real event, actually. There was a guy who came and stole all the children. So, it's been going on for a really long time, Chris. It really has. I mean, eight million children, that's a lot of children. But, you know, we're taught to accept this through fables and folk tales, the Pied Piper of Hamelin, you know, the children that disappear in the night. It becomes part of fable, part of folk legend. Oh, yeah, the missing children. There's always people missing children, you know. We just hear about it. We don't ever really look at what the figures are and what the numbers are, and really ask ourselves where they all go. You know, what's happening with these children? What's on your pizza toppings?
Mm-hmm.
We stopped eating pork a long time ago.
Pork a long time ago, but now it's even more important to stay away from pork.
Yeah.
Because
in some lines of research regarding Pizzagate, they're feeding the kids to the pigs, the bodies to the pigs. And so the pigs have human DNA within them. I would go so far as to say that they're actually grinding these kids up, the bodies of these kids, and putting them into processed meats. There was a guy named Rabbi Finkelstein. And because of the name Rabbi Finkelstein, I never took the interview seriously because I thought it was satire. But I did some research on this guy Finkelstein, and he's an actual rabbi. And he was doing an interview talking about how stupid the goyim are and how they would grind up the goyim's kids and feed them right back to them. And we would sit there and buy them at McDonald's and Burger King and whatnot. Now, all of a sudden, I'm taking that a lot more seriously than I did 6 years ago when I first heard it.
Yeah, but of course you can't go and get any of it tested. It costs you thousands of dollars to have it all tested, any of the meats tested or anything. So, yeah, I don't eat any of those products. I wonder what's going on. But, yeah, I mean, a popular way of getting rid of bodies always has been feeding them to pigs. You know, never do a deal with a pig farmer.
Yep.
So,
well, Podesta was a pig farmer.
To discuss things, you know?
Yep.
Right.
Podesta was a pig farmer when he was younger.
Yeah.
And he enjoyed the slaughtering process, and even kept, I think there was a story where he kept the head of a pig in his bed for one night, and he like stared at it. And I don't know what the deal is with that, but we also know that James Alefantis is connected to a pig farm as well. And
a sty of pigs will eat a human body in a couple of minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So. They'll eat everything but the teeth and the hair,
right.
Even the bones, everything, all gone. Like, so, yeah, it's a popular way of disposing of bodies.
I think it's a
getting into some gruesome stuff today, Chris. This is a very enlightening, uplifting show, isn't it?
I didn't expect this at all,
me either.
Especially on Christmas. But
yeah, it's Christmas.
You know what, though, Max? It's great.
Enjoy your Christmas pork, folks. Enjoy your Christmas ham.
Your Christmas ham.
It's great to get this information flowing, because we've been sitting on this for so long, and we've been debating, do we put this film out or do we talk about it? We'll just talk about it, disclose it, and then that's it. People can do whatever they want after that.
Yeah.
The thing is, with the Pizzagate information and the whole global pedophile ring that's being uncovered, and with what's going on within the Middle East with the expose of the Clinton emails, how this is now tying into it, be very difficult to make a film on Pizzagate at the moment, because the investigation is still ongoing and there's new information coming to light every day.
Every day.
Very true. So, let me point something out that
somebody
said in the chat room, Max, listen to this, James in the chat room, he said David Cameron has been connected to the pigs.
That wouldn't support you.
Do you remember that?
Was it a pig or was it a sheep? Or
No. It was a pig.
It was a pig.
He was supposedly screwing
was.
A pig as a college initiation.
Oh.
But
it was a dead pig's head. He had to have sex with the head of a dead pig.
Right. Now that brings a whole nother element to this.
Yeah, it does.
Well, look, there's no way David Cameron would not be connected to this network anyway. He was the British Prime Minister. So, you know, just his ties to the royal family and their ties to pedophilia through Jimmy Savile and their own, you know, nephew, like Prince Andrew. So, I mean, you know, it's all pervasive. It's everywhere.
Well, if you look at Tony Blair, too, his wife was with Hillary Clinton at the inauguration of the International Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Tony Blair has also been connected to all of this as well. So
you've got
both of them, both, you know, wives of people that have been implicated as pedophiles in the past many, many times, being the forerunners of the International Center for Missing and Exploited Children. I mean, the foxes are literally guarding the hen house.
Oh, absolutely. You'll find that pretty well all of these government-sponsored organizations for children are all running children. That's what they do. You know, and this is why it's so difficult for you or I to say form up a house, a halfway house to help children. We need all these sorts of government approval. We need to have all sorts of stuff and regulation. And they want to bring in one of their overseers, which would eventually make sure that you did something wrong and you were gone, and they take over the organization so they can use it to traffic children. That's the way it works. You know, you or I can't help the kids. It's got to be the government that does it. And it's the government which is creating all the problems. I mean, ultimately, when you look at the world, every problem we got comes from government because they're the ones who create the legislation which allows it all to happen and creates all the obfuscation and all the red tape and all the subversion and everything that we see, all the obstruction. It all comes from government. So, you know, that's why they have to step in and regulate and control everything because they're the ones running the whole crime gang. You know, but you can guarantee that anybody who's got ties to Hillary Clinton in any sort of substantial way is part of this. Is a criminal and needs to be investigated because this woman has so much blood on her hands and she has overthrown so many countries now and, you know, Bill Clinton as well, I imagine. I mean, it's the Clinton Foundation. Mm-hmm. You can even look at ISIS and the whole ragtag terrorist army that's rampaging across Syria at the moment and say this is a Clinton Foundation private army. That's basically what it is. That's who's funding it. You know, even I did a talk on Press TV today and they're talking about diplomatic negotiations and will there ever be a peaceful settlement in Syria, the need for all parties to sit down and discuss it. And I said, well, that's all very well, but you're going to find that some of the parties that sit down are mercenaries and they're being paid to just keep the war going and to destabilize the place as much as they can. So it doesn't matter what sort of agreement you come up with. If these guys are paid enough money, they're going to do what they're told to do because that's what they're there for. You know, I don't think there'll ever be any diplomatic situation until people realize that there are rogue elements that exist within the U.S. government. It isn't even the U.S. government in itself which is responsible. Because when you look at it, you look how Hillary Clinton has set up all these systems of funneling weapons and funneling arms and all the stuff she's got set up, all these channels she set up when she was Secretary of State. Now the president comes in there. There's all these wars going on. She doesn't even have to be part of government to go and overthrow a country and start a war there. She's got all the connections. She's got generals at her disposal. She's got NATO at her disposal. Through all these arms deals and all these people she's cut in, they can just go in and create this instability. Then the president's got to deal with it and pretend that it's what he's, you know, doing to try to save face to the people. And how can he say, oh, well, look, it's this crime gang. How can he do it without America imploding? It's like you said, if they were exposed to this criminality, the whole government would implode. You wouldn't have a country. So you're in a position now where it doesn't matter who gets in power in the United States. Even the only way Donald Trump's going to be able to do anything is if he drains the swamp, if he exposes what's in the Hillary Clinton emails. If he doesn't allow this to sit there and wait 5 years, all this sort of rubbish, if he goes in there and he drains the swamp straight away, he could bring about change. But if not, if he doesn't expose this within the first month of taking office, within these first 100 days or whatever he says, then there's no hope. It's just going to go down the road that it's been going, you know?
Right.
So
right.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
You know, one more person I wanted to mention, of course, is George Soros, because George Soros has been involved for decades in basically investing in the overthrow of countries.
He's in this up to his eyeballs.
Yes.
You can see this from the Clinton emails as well, up to his eyeball. He's as guilty as she is, and there's so many other people that are as well.
Well, and then he's connected to David Brock, Correct the Record. And James Alefantis as well. He gave.
Well, just for people that don't realize this, David Brock, who was the head of Correct the Record for Hillary Clinton, was the boyfriend of James Alefantis, the pizza shop owner.
Right. Right. And so there's so many coincidences regarding this. And it turns out that this pizza shop that everybody's talking about was given at least $20,000 a year from American Bridge for the 21st Century. American Bridge for the 21st Century is a super PAC that was funded by George Soros and created by David Brock. So all these people are all connected in this one little club, and they're trying to tell us that it's all fake news. You know, oh,
yeah.
Oh, it's all fake news. It's just a lowly little pizza shop owner and you're putting him in danger. I'm sick of this. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, that's why they brought the pizza shop into it. That's why there was such a fixation on the pizza shop. You know, all these YouTubers that suddenly came out of nowhere. You know, suddenly you hadn't heard of them before and suddenly they've got, you know, 20, 50,000 subscribers, 100,000 subscribers out of nowhere. And they're pushing this attack on the pizza store. They're pushing the pizza store, pizza store, pizza store, even calling it Pizzagate. Wasn't it Pedogate? You know, why Pizzagate? Why the focus on pizza? You know, pizza is only
one point.
Word in the code. Pizza's only one word in the code. Why not Pasta Gate? Why not Walnut Gate? You know, what about some of the other? What about Handkerchief Gate?
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm glad you brought this up, because this was a part of the film that we were contemplating. We got stuck on how to present this, because we were doing some digging, and we couldn't find any code for pasta. We couldn't find any code for walnut. Pizza, cheese pizza is code on the deep web. A hacker sent me a screenshot I think it was a wiki, some kind of wiki or something like that, that defined cheese pizza as a code for child pornography. So even the term pizza doesn't even go to child trafficking the way it does. There's one supposed code, the handkerchief code, that says that black is S&M and white is little boy or pedophile. Well, we looked at a book called The Leatherman's Handbook, which is where this code supposedly came from, the handkerchief code. And according to The Leatherman's Handbook, white actually means masturbation. So is like in the gay community, the guy would wear a black handkerchief and a white handkerchief, symbolizing that he's into masturbation or masturbating somebody else, and also S&M. So that's how the code would be laid out. However, on the internet, they've taken it and they've added that white is means little boy or pedo or whatever, and it just doesn't quite add up. That in and of itself is a red herring. So we were looking at some of the emails and going, you know what, these don't quite lead, at least under scrutiny, where they say they lead. Have you come across any information like this?
There's a chance that pizza means like a child from Syria. Walnut is a child from Haiti. Pasta is a child from somewhere else, Philippines or something. There's a chance that it's this as well. So, but there's definitely code. There's definitely code in these mails. But there is, a possibility of it being, children of different nationalities they're referring to. There does seem to be a lot of disinformation put out there to muddy the waters in this. There's been an awful lot of COINTEL infiltration into the investigation and awful lot of focus on the pizza store where it shouldn't be. But,
well, if you look at that email that says, I found a map that seems pizza. I found a handkerchief with a map on it that seems pizza related. So, and the handkerchief is black and white. If you look at it from the context of the Leatherman's Handbook, which is black for S&M and white for masturbation, suddenly the meaning changes. They found a handkerchief possibly with blood and semen on it instead of little boy and S&M. Now, when you look at Rhea Pratt's paintings, you realize that underneath the victim, there always seems to be a handkerchief in several of her paintings, not just one. So it's more than just a coincidence. There's always a handkerchief or some kind of cloth underneath the victim as the victim is being sexually abused. I'm speculating that perhaps they're using this kind of quote-unquote handkerchief with blood and semen or juices, sexual juices of these children that are being sexually tortured, and using them in a spirit cooking type of ritual. What do you think about that?
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure, absolutely. That's what it's for. That's what they're doing with them. They save them to use in their rituals for whatever it is they do. Absolutely. That's what they do with them. But it's what the codes relate to we're talking about. I mean, the codes may not mean little boy, little girl, or whatever, but yeah, there's a lot of disinformation put out there. But yeah, what you're saying about the handkerchief, yeah, absolutely, they do this. And they like to collect the handkerchiefs and keep the handkerchiefs for whatever it is they do with them.
When I was watching the spirit cooking video, I realized that the spirit cooking is the dark, as you said earlier, the dark part of the dark side, where the ayahuasca would be the light side. Ayahuasca is made from a plant. It's life energy. And when I was watching her pour that blood into the container, I realized it was just like pouring ayahuasca from a jar into a cup or whatever. And she's using blood instead of ayahuasca. Why the hell would you use blood in a dark way to get to a spiritual place where you have these tools like ayahuasca and everything else? I just don't understand
a lot of the way we're controlled is through our sexuality, control of our sexuality. What is in the spirit cooking is a mixture of blood and semen and breast milk, apparently.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So when you put all that together, and the whole thing about cut deep into the middle finger, eat the pain. You know, this is all highly sexual. You know, pain and sex have always been synonymous, mm-hmm. and through control of our sexuality is how they've really managed to control the human species, which is what even promotes this type of pedophilia and is able to draw people in by suppressing people's sexuality and then feeding them pornography and all this sort of stuff. You awaken all these deep urges and frustrations and all sorts of stuff, you know. So they're so repressed sexually that when they do find a partner and want to have sex, it's just brutal, you know. Mm-hmm. When they're encouraged to have brutal, rough sex through pornography now, there's nothing love-making about it anymore. It's all about the act. You know, and as debased and animalistic as possible. It's nothing about love or procreation or anything like that. So, you know, it all serves the same agenda, really. And I think that it's something to do with eat the pain, like inflicting that amount of pain on yourself and getting to a point where you can see pain as being pleasure. Remember those horror movies they brought out 10, 15 years ago? I don't know what they were called, but the guy with all the pins and needles in his face and stuff?
Hellraiser.
Yeah, that sort of stuff, how that was promoting the concept into the public mind that pain is good. Pain is sexual pleasure if you look at it in the right way. So to be able to do that to yourself and feel that as sexual pleasure may allow you to be able to cause incredible pain onto other people, believing that you can get them to a point where it's pleasurable for them. You know, I don't know. I don't know how their minds work, but maybe it's something to do with that. I don't know. But it's definitely to do with mixing sexuality and pain together. And I would say that's why the breast milk and the semen is in there. You know, the breast milk to symbolize the feminine and life, right. The semen to symbolize masculinism and life, and possibly even masturbation, all sorts of weird dark stuff. I mean, what's it doing there and not in the body? I mean, I don't know. Mixed with blood. I mean, you know, it's all pretty dark, but I don't know how they work, but it's just throwing it out there. You know?
Well, the public display of spirit cooking, I don't know if you came across this video, but this was something else we were including in the film. They bring out a cake and they put it on a coffin bier, which a bier is like this thing where four people will bring out a body with a shroud over it. And this body looks very, very, very real. And they lay it down and the entire crowd is just salivating and it's a cake and they're chopping it up and each person gets a cake, gets a piece of the body. Now, what's chilling, I mean, even more so is that when they're leaving the knives inside of the body after the cake has been served, first of all, they start with the legs we've heard Hannibal Lecter and several other quote unquote cannibals say, you know, you start with the legs and et cetera, et cetera. And you hear it eating the legs in the story. I'm getting a little bit sick talking about this. But anyways, they leave the knives inside of the chest in a very, very horrific way. And it's this whole display, for the crowd. Now, Marina Abramovich, she said when the ritual's performed in an art gallery, then it's merely art. But when it's performed in private, then it's an intimate spiritual ceremony. So if this is the type of stuff that they're displaying in public, what the hell is happening in private?
Well, you got to look at that as well. That meeting that you're talking about where there was a whole bunch of people there in a gallery, that wasn't really public. I mean, they were all there in their little white outfits like the way the Beatles had on in their album. Remember that Beatle album? They were all dressed in white?
Yeah, yeah.
And they all had the little baby parts all over them? Interesting. Mm-hmm. But they were all dressed in the same sort of thing. So, I mean, was that a public thing, or was that a private thing?
No, it was a public thing.
That was a public thing.
Yeah.
The one that was private was the one that she was contacting Tony Podesta about. Hey, are you going?
There's two videos. One where she's in a room and she's writing on the wall, deeply on the finger. And then there's a whole another one that's a public exhibition of spirit cooking where they actually eat the body.
Yeah, and Deborah Harry gets up and sings or whatever.
Right, right. And
I've seen that one. Yeah, well, you know, well, this, of course, is a representation of cannibalism and murder. Of course, what else can it possibly be?
Oh, yeah.
Interestingly enough, I hate to interrupt you, but going back to Louis Bourgeois, who made the painting about the sculpture of the Arch of Hysteria, later on in her life, she basically, throughout her entire life, gave hints that she was abused as a child, that she had a very traumatic childhood, and that as a result of that traumatic childhood, that is what comes out in a lot of her work. And some of her work toward the end of her life was a lot more telling as to what was in her psyche, and one of it was called Cells. And it was these little rooms that she constructed that had pieces of like dead bodies inside of them and lots of mirrors and things of that nature. And what's interesting is at when she performed these exhibitions, she had everybody dress in none other than white, long white coats with red lettering on them.
Well, one of her other exhibits is the most chilling, and we also got stuck at this point in trying to figure out how we're going to put all this together because it's so unbelievable. There was a guy named Cheese Bay, and Cheese Bay was selling
faulty
hard drives on eBay for $900 to $1,500 a pop. And then a hacker gave me some information, and I wasn't able to reproduce it, so that's why I was still questioning the information. But he said if you open up one of the photos, the Podesta photos, you can find encrypted code in there. And what he speculated, and I speculated too, because I speculated on the red rooms first, and then he said, look, this is how you find the encrypted code which leads people to the red rooms, is you open up these pictures and you can find them within the pictures themselves. But basically a red room is a place where they'll murder people on camera. And you go to the deep web or other parts. I found out during this investigation that there's actually these wide area networks that are outside of the internet and even outside of the deep web. So there's an internet that's outside of the dark internet, that's outside of the dark internet itself, a completely private network. And so he theorized that these encrypted passes go to these red room viewing areas. And Tony Podesta was talking about how he has this room inside of his on his property that's 5 meters by 10 meters wide or something like that.
5 by 8,
where he can project quote unquote very complex video pieces on all four walls, which to me sounded like code for he's got a freaking red room with several different
angles,
and you can have a 360 degree view of the torture that's taking place. Well, going back to Louise Bourgeois, one of her exhibits, it's called The Red Room. And when you look at The Red Room, this is where you see it's a room that has torture devices in there. It's got drills. It's got all kinds of stuff. All the stuff that you would imagine in a red room to be is all right there. And there's a little pillow on it that says, I love you in French. It's the most horrific, chilling thing imaginable. But that's basically the end of the film, at least where we were, the end of our research and where we wound up. But this is, it's all connecting. It's so connected, but so unbelievable at the same time.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know. That's the thing, and it is all connected. And, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't even surprise me when people that are downloading these images, some of Podesta's images, will they later be caught for having images that contain embedded codes which lead to child pornography? You know, is that a setup as well? So you've got to look at where all this can go with all the sorts of laws they're bringing in.
Well, it's okay because we're media and we're protected.
Love your work, brother. I think we're protected anyway because we're on the side of right. We're on the side of truth. And honestly, I don't care what they say or do anyway. So, but yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if that's what is in a lot of these pictures, and that's what, you know, can be found. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if that's how they pass the images around and pass the links around just through normal everyday pictures with embedded codes in them. Makes sense.
It's horrific. We have about 10 minutes left, Max. I want to say this is probably the best show that we've done in a long time. So thank you very much for joining us like this last minute. Is there anything regarding Pizzagate that we haven't touched upon, or should we switch it over to a positive note?
Yeah, it probably would be good to change it to something more positive. You know, on a positive note, I'm speaking in Acapulco in February, if anybody is in Mexico in February. I think I'm speaking at the Free Your Mind Conference as well in April. In Philadelphia, and I'm also doing a bunch of workshops in Hawaii in March. I'll be in Hawaii pretty well for all of March doing combo workshops. So if anyone is in Hawaii or would like to come over, that would be interesting as well.
Tom Jones in the chat room was asking if you'll ever be in Canada.
Canada. Look, I was in Canada last year at Toronto Airport for a while. I went and visited a friend, but That's about it. I haven't done any talks in Canada, but if anybody wants to book me one, I'd be happy to do one this year or next year. But I think that next year, I think 2017, is probably going to be the last year that I go traveling for a while, because it's just, it's been taking it out of me. It really has. I've been traveling pretty well nonstop for the last few years. Like this last year, I've only been home for 2 months of the whole year. And I've been to like 28 countries or something in the last 4 years. And I'm getting old and it's just kind of taking it out of me. I came home, I got violently ill, viciously sick when I got back here to Australia from traveling.
Oh, man.
And it's just, yeah, it's really taking it out of me. So I think I'm going to go and do this stint, but then I'll probably stay home for a while. So if you're out there anywhere and you do hear of me speaking, do come along, because it'll probably be your last chance to get to see me for a while. But I've got to, when I leave here in February, I've got to go to Iran. Ooh. I'm speaking at a conference in Iran, which is a delegation of 400 delegates from around the world, and it's all discussing the possibility and the need for a Palestinian intifada, and whether that would be a viable thing, and what to do about the situation in Palestine. And then I go from Iran to Mexico, and then I go from Mexico to Hawaii, then I go from Hawaii to Philadelphia. I'm hoping to maybe do a talk in New York and one in L.A., and then I've got one in Ohio around about the 5th of March. And then I'm going to the UK for AV8 with Ian Crane around about the middle of March or middle of May. The 5th of May I'm doing the talk in Ohio as well. Then I go, after that I leave, I go to AV8 in England at Horwood House. And then I'll probably go to Spain for a month. Then I've got to go and do a talk in Lebanon at the Palestinian University in Lebanon. And then I will probably go back to Spain and wait, because I've got another talk, I think, in Copenhagen in September. And then I'll finally get back to Peru, which is where I wanted to go originally in February. So, but it's going to take me that long to get to Peru. I'm basically on tour until September this year, and so, or next year. And then I'll get a little bit of time off, and then I'll probably come back to Australia either February or June 2018. And probably stay home for a while, I think, from there.
Fantastic.
Sounds like you've got a busy year planned.
To our energetic guides out there, I hope that this constitutes shining the light in the darkness, and I hope that we don't have to explore this very horrific, horrific topic any longer. Yes, yeah. But if we have to, then we will. If we're called to do it again, then we will.
Well, we got to shine the light in the darkness. Yeah, it is a big year, Sherry, plan. I mean, I haven't actually planned it, though. Other people have planned it for me, so that's the way it goes. But we do have to continue on this, but realize that, you know, that's what it's for. I mean, we've been given a choice, you know, and our choice to ignore this is what is allowing it to continue. We can't ignore it. It is happening. It is real. It's not fake news. You know, all these wars are unnecessary. All the stuff that's going on is unnecessary. The entire human situation at the moment is completely and utterly unnecessary. Now, if we do make enough noise about it and we do shine the light in a positive enough way, then we may force Donald Trump to actually take action on this. You know, he may not have a choice, because, you know, the world has had enough. I mean, really, we've had enough. We've been farmed, and it's time we called it. You know, we've got to really pay attention to this, and we've got to do something about it. No one's going to come and save us until we're even prepared to save ourselves. And even for those who believe in Christ, he wouldn't stand a day if he came back now. He would survive on this earth. He'd be crucified by half the truth movement.
Oh, of course.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and even if you believe in Christ, well, it says that he's going to come back and lead the people once they unite against evil. So we got to unite, folks, even if you're a Christian. Hey, we've got to unite first. So let's do it. Let's address this evil. Doesn't matter what your religion is. Doesn't matter what your faith is. Doesn't matter what your nationality is. There are children being harvested and taken and brutalized right now, being loaded onto containers right now, being raped by dogs right now, having all this terrible stuff happen right now because we're just not doing anything about it. And when our politicians obstruct our path to justice, we just allow them to do it. So, 5 years, okay, no worries, 5 years. No, it's not okay. That guy is just, he should be charged with obstruction, because we don't want to let this go on one more day. you know, but it's up to us to call it, you know.
Let me get your take before we run out of time. One more thought. Trump went over to Netanyahu, and according to the articles I've read, and it's hard to tell with all the fake news, I'm doing air quotes here, but supposedly he agreed to up Israel's aid to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, which means that right now it's shared between Palestine and Israel, and then that they're going to move the embassy over to Jerusalem as well, which means to me that they're not going to recognize the Palestinian state, and Trump is actually going to backtrack on all the progress that we've made to help free the Palestinians. Your thoughts on that?
If he does that, then it's all over. I mean, that'll be the clincher. I mean, he did say, I think, that he wasn't going to do that. He did say he was going to do that to start with, but then I think he reneged on it. But, I mean, if he does move the embassy to Jerusalem and recognize that as the capital of Israel, then, yeah, it's a blow to Palestine, and it means he's a barefaced liar who was elected under false pretenses like every president that came before him.
You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. So, Max, thank you very much for your time this evening. Get some rest for sure.
Yeah.
Can you share with us in the last couple of minutes any recent ayahuasca experience, revelation, anything to end it on a positive note?
I actually haven't drank for a long time, Chris. I haven't drank since September 2015, I think. It's been about 18 months since I had my last drink. I've had a few opportunities, but I just haven't. So, I've been serving Kumbo a lot. I've been serving myself a lot of frappe. I've got developed a pretty good relationship with frappe, which I find very helpful to ground me and help me focus. But I haven't been doing any types of anything really mind altering or exploring that side at all. Sorry, but I've been making my own way and progressing things in my own way, and I'll be back in Peru soon. So I'm sure I'll partake when I get back there.
Excellent. 2016 didn't seem like the year to drink. I think the last time I drank was September 2015 as well. And then we drank just a couple of nights ago, which we broke that long cycle of not drinking. I feel great after doing it again. I was afraid that if I was to drink too soon, that I would start going into these thought loops about Pizzagate. Luckily, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
It was a very enlightening experience. But you've got to shed all of that stuff before you go into the ayahuasca realm. And when you're, you know, the way I see it is we go to the ayahuasca realm to get our mission. Then we go complete our mission. And while we're on the mission, we don't need to go back to the ayahuasca realm until we need more instruction.
Yeah. There is if you're interested in participating in the Kumbo workshops as well, I think the name of the website is earthsong.org or earthsong.com. Or it could be earthsonghawaii.org, earthsonghawaii.com. I'm not sure, one of those two. But I should have the link here so I can tell you, but I just don't have it offhand, unfortunately. But it's interesting because Earth Song is the name of one of the films I'm working on, and it's also the name of the retreat in Hawaii that I'll be staying at. So I thought that was quite coincidental.
Ah.
But if you are interested in coming over for some Kumbo or just coming and catching up and having a chat or a one-on-one in general, just look for that site. I'll have links to it on the Crow House anyway once I get over there.
Okay, oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I've never done that. That's the venom, the frog venom that they poke
venom,
you with.
Yeah. That's amazingly healing stuff, Chris. It really is.
I probably need to do that.
Yeah.
It just seems pretty horrific.
Yeah, for the 5 minutes that it's completely taken over your body and purging it out.
Oh, it's horrendous, and it's longer than 5 minutes. It's usually 20 minutes up to 40 minutes. But it's horrendous. It's the most horrible experience you'll ever go through. The moment it starts coming on, you'll start thinking, oh, my God, why did I do this? I wish I had not done this. You've given me too much. I'm going to die. This is horrible. And then you'll be vomiting. You'll be swollen, and you'll feel like you're going to die, and you start to look like a frog.
Oh, you're really winning our hearts over here.
And then the next day you'll be going, oh, my God, when can I do it again? Because that's how much healing you get from it. It totally centers you. It refocuses you. It grounds you. It cleanses you. They give it to hunters the night before they go hunting so they can sense their prey before they can see them. They give it to warriors before they go into battle so they've got clarity and focus and enlightening reflexes. You know, it's incredible. The focus and the clarity you get from Kumbo is absolutely incredible. The cleansing, the physical cleansing that you get, you bring out bile from the depths and depths of your stomach and toxins that have been embedded in your muscles for years that are all thrown into your stomach and you purge them all out and you can't get them out any other way. You know, it's incredibly healing. It really is. But of course, once you've had that amount of toxins pulled into your body, you feel like you've been poisoned because you have. You've been given venom of the most toxic frog in the rainforest and it's bonded with all of the toxins and dioxins in your body and it's pulled it all into your bloodstream and your immune system freaks out, dumps it all into your stomach and strengthens itself and then you purge it all up. You know, it totally supercharges your immune system. If you do 3 combo sessions in 1 moon cycle, you'll find that you just don't get sick for like 3 or 4 months. If you do it 3 times, 4 times a year, you'll find that you just don't get sick.
Excellent. Max, thank you so much. Hang with us for a second. I want to talk to you off air if you have a few moments. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in this evening. Have a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, whatever you're celebrating. And don't forget, keep your thumb to the sky. Don't forget to bring your towel. Kiss the one you love right now. You never know when the last time is going to be. Love you. We'll see you next weekend.
See you next weekend, guys. Love you.